Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston, and you are listening to Battle Red Radio. And tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, welcome to the Brock Osweiler Show tonight, everybody.
Yeah, and did you know that the Houston Texans needed a quarterback for the last 3 years?
I had no freaking idea.
It's kind of like they just got shot in the head, and they just sat there on a recliner for 3 years and just shoved a bunch of gauze in it. And then kind of feel like, and then kind of realize the need to go to the hospital. And so, you know, here's where we're at. Finally, after three off seasons, they may move the quarterback. And Brock Osweiler last year had a DYAR of 153, which was 22nd in the league, a DVOA of negative 3.2%, which was 21st, a completion percentage of 61.8%, adjusted yards per attempt of 6.9, which was 24th. He threw 10 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and his sack rate was 7.7%, which was 27th. And also, sack rate's a stat that is kind of more indicative of quarterback play than an offensive line because quarterbacks have more control over sack rate than what you would kind of think off face value. But anyways, if you look at the numbers and who he was grouped with, he played about as well as Brian Hoyer and our favorite example of opportunity cost and your draft crushes, Teddy Bridgewater. So, BFD, do you think Brock Osweiler is a good quarterback?
Well, if I have to answer it in the black and white terms, the answer is no. Let me go just check the questions. I don't want to buzzkill any of the questions here, but you know what? I think the company that you put them in, Brian Hoyer, Teddy Bridgewater, though clearly I'd still much rather have Teddy Bridgewater in a decent offensive system, is about where he's at. So when you look at it in those stark terms, what you just talked about was the 21st, 22nd best quarterback in the league. We've headed into the 2015 season, saying Brian Hoyer is the 27th best quarterback in the league, and Ryan Mallett has the potential to be the 22nd best quarterback in the league. So that's how far down expectations are for Brock Osweiler. Hey, if he can be the 22nd best quarterback in the year, then yeehaw! That's still a very below average quarterback. That's still not somebody who you can rely on to win you games. And we've harped on that nonstop on this show for a couple of years now. You know, you can't trot out the 22nd best quarterback in the league and really expect to have success. And let's put this in more stark terms. Brock Osweiler lost his starting job to Peyton Manning last year, and Peyton Manning was the worst quarterback in the league, unarguably the worst quarterback in the league. 9 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, worst quarterback rating. Couldn't throw the ball without ice coming down with it. He was the worst quarterback in the league. And Gary Kubiak, okay, granted, it's Gary, such little faith in Osweiler that he pulled him for the corpse of Peyton Manning down the stretch and for the playoffs. That tells you a lot about how the Broncos really pretty much felt about Brock.
Yeah, and that same Manning also went 11 for 27 in the Super Bowl, which was still just kind of unbelievable. You know, I think Osweiler is probably about the 22nd best quarterback in the league at the moment. And I think he's, you know, about average. I don't think he's good. But I think what, you know, you're kind of buying in if you're a Texans fan is, you know, a couple of different things. Is that, one, he's 26, and he's in the prime of his career. And this is pretty much his rookie season. He only played 7 games. He didn't get a chance to play it all behind, you know, Peyton Manning for the last 3 years. He only started 7 games this year. He's going to be better than Brian Hoyer. And also, he backed up Peyton Manning, and you know how much that means whenever you back up, you know, really great quarterbacks like Manning or Tom Brady. You know, that's really indicative of future success also. I always like throwing in some sarcasm, really dumb things in there that, you know, are completely untrue, but see if you ever catch up on them. You caught up on that one. But I think Osweiler is, you know, he's fine, he's average, and he's going to be better than what they have. Now, that's not saying he's good, and he's not good at the moment. I think that's one thing kind of be important. You know, one kind of thing to make sure that's important to know if you're a fan of this team is that your expectations, you know, they should be high. You should be excited in a way that they finally got a quarterback. But the quarterback they got is not good right now. And there's a chance for him to be good maybe. But right now he's average. He's about the 22nd best quarterback in the league. He's like what you wanted Brian – he's like Brian Hoyer's ceiling is what he is right now. And so you're kind of buying on the hope that, you know, of all the things I just listed, I'll say them again. And, you know, he's 26. This is pretty much his rookie year. He started just 7 games. And he's in the prime of his career. And that's kind of the argument for him. BFT, do you think that's a good enough argument for signing Osweiler?
Well, to me, this is the classic case of striving for mediocrity. What do you think he's really going to be? What is his true ceiling? I mean, I watched the guy play, and we'll go into this a little bit later, but I watched over an hour of quote-unquote film on him, both college and pro from this season, film, to see how he's evolved. What is your real expectation? Is Brock Osweiler your 16th best quarterback in the league? Is that what your expectation is? Is that what his ceiling is? Do you think he's the 10th best? So, you know, he's 26. Guys are going to fall out of the league. Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck at the rate he's going. So is Brock really going to give you that ceiling? Is he the 16th best? Or is a guy like Wentz, Goff, Lynch, does he have a better chance to be the 16th best quarterback in the league? So right now you're talking a guy with a ceiling of, I mean, I would love to see what you think. What do you think he's going to max out as a quarterback as compared to the league? Love to see comments. Because, you know, again, that's why I harp on the strive for mediocrity thing so much, is this is a perfect case of this. Great, we signed a body who wasn't 30 years old and clearly not a proven poor quarterback. Is that what your goal is? I would have built the team differently. I've talked about it before. Heck, I would have gone out. I would have signed a couple of guys. I would have made the offensive line stronger. I would have gotten a couple more pieces on defense and taken me a rookie quarterback with the hopes that, hey, this guy might be the 10th best quarterback in the league. That's pretty dadgum good. But you give him a lot of tools and a lot of protection to work with. So, you know, that's my overall just kind of feel. We're going to talk a little bit more about Brock and some of his other attributes.
What do you think Osweiler's ceiling is?
Well, right now he's Nick Foles. To me, he's Nick Foles. Like, have you ever seen the two guys in the room at the same time? So, I think his ceiling is – I was trying to come up with a good comp for a ceiling for him, and I'm really struggling for one. I guess league-wide, he's – to me, he's at absolute best, what I see from mechanics, reading defenses, accuracy issues. You know, we're going to talk about the his interception rate. That he is the 16th. His ceiling is the 16th best quarterback in the league. That is the working definition of striving for mediocrity to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me his ceiling is an above average quarterback. So I think 16. Yeah, that's the definition of average. And I guess, you know, I don't even know exactly who an average, you know, quarterback would be off the top of my head. I think his ceiling, I've watched a little bit of his game. I need to watch some more. But I think he has the potential to maybe be above average a little bit. So I think maybe like Alex Smith could be the sort of guy that you're looking for, where except instead of everything being short passes that he completes regularly, it's more whenever the numbers balance out, he has the chance to be maybe more inaccurate, but the ability to throw the deep ball, because he does throw the deep ball, I guess, fairly well. And I guess an above average quarterback is somebody like Alex Smith and Eli Manning this year. I think the level above that is somebody like Jay Cutler, Matthew Stafford, or Phillip Rivers. And then you have kind of the group of Drew Brees, Roethlisberger, you know, Russell Wilson, Palmer, Brady, Cam, those like top 8 guys. So I can see him falling, maybe hitting like the 12th best quarterback in the NFL, but nothing probably any higher than that. And I guess the idea is for the Texans is that with their defense, even if they get the 16th best quarterback, they may have a shot to lose in the divisional round rather than the wild card round. And I think that's the biggest, you know, problem for me, and it goes back to either striving for mediocrity. And so I think Osweiler right now, the ceiling is you lose in the second round of the playoffs instead of prepping your pants in the first round of the playoffs. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, pretty much. Because, you know, the arguments have been, and they're all valid, they're all very valid arguments. Him and Rivers. Rivers has been very optimistic about this signing. What do you want me to complain about, says Rivers. They went out and did something. True. True. I could go out and get drunk, run over to some dude on his bike, and I went out and did something too. So that's okay. Tim had the arguments, hey, you know, they think they can coach this guy up. Here's the big one. Here's been a real stickler for me this week. Because Bob has proven the ability to coach up mediocre quarterbacks. I don't see that. I don't. He took Ryan Fitzpatrick and Brian Hoyer behind a very good offensive line, and they were below average quarterbacks. So they were basically, they met expectations, but Bob coached them up. Do you know who actually has a proven track record of coaching up quarterbacks? Gary Kubiak. So you're going to tell me that Bob's going to do more with Osweiler than what Kubiak's done? I'm not really buying that. I'm not on that team. So when I look at it from that perspective, then no, I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, too, because Gary Kubiak's very good at developing quarterbacks and giving them easy throws. You know, Osweiler had a lot of his touchdown passes were wide-open throws in the seams that, you know, he set with his offense. A lot of things off play-action pass that were, you know, deep wide-open post routes that he sets up in his offense. He creates easy throws. All Bill O'Brien's really passing offense has been, let's isolate DeAndre Hopkins on the sideline, get him in one-versus-one coverage, and throw him the ball a lot. And just throw it to him over and over again. And that's pretty much been, you know, his scheme to it. And so I think a below-average quarterback can do that, and they have, and they've done that before. But I think Kubiak is just as good as O'Brien when it comes to developing a quarterback and game planning for him, even though if it's more – I guess the narrative kind of gets flawed because O'Brien does different things with his offense, right? You know, he'll come out in the
right.
Wildcat. He'll change things based on the opponent. And Kubiak's not like that. Kubiak has – a system that if you execute it well, it's, you know, kick ass. And but it goes back to the thing, you have to execute it well. And that's kind of what they lost in 2013. And so I don't think O'Brien's going to be this mystical creature who can get extra oomph out of Osweiler. I think if he gets better, it's mostly because of the chance of being the starter, going to camp, working with the first team the entire year, not being a backup anymore, and him growing as a player more so than, you know, Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't – and again, I really don't want to. It's not my intent to discredit those arguments because they're all very, very valid arguments. Wilton's made a bunch of them. Tim made some. I've seen them sorted in the comments. You know, it's not invalid to say, you know, they did something. Why are you still pissed? Or they did – and I'm not really pissed. I just think it's striving for mediocrity. It's kind of, you know, it's what I complain about a lot is I don't want to be mediocre. This guy, he can be coached up. He's got a rocket arm. He doesn't, actually. All these things, they're not invalid. They're not. But you have to take a pretty big leap of faith, in my opinion, and it's not one I'm willing to take until I see it on the field.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just talked about his arm, and you watched some film. What kind of analysis do you have? What did you see whenever you watched him going from Arizona State to his year in Denver?
His arm action is just so odd. It's really odd. I remember when I saw him in college and I was getting ready for that draft, he was somebody who I didn't like from the – and guys also have to mention, and girls, I've been kind of biased against Osweiler since he was drafted. He's not a guy I really like. The biggest reason is his arm slot is very, very inconsistent. We thought that Bill O'Brien liked the type of quarterback that had easy, repeatable mechanics. Brock Osweiler is whatever the exact opposite of that is. His arm slot changes. The weirdest thing is the way he drops his arm. His arm slot, it comes from a quarterback that is more 6'1 than 6'7, 6'8. It is a very, very low arm angle. He is not the top tall and fall kind of guy that Bill O'Brien supposedly likes. Poor mechanics, poor follow through. He doesn't throw the ball as much as he kind of shot puts it. With the short arm motion. So mechanics-wise, he's kind of a nightmare. What that does, that affects your power down the field, that impacts your arm strength, that impacts your accuracy. If your arm slot is not consistent, your accuracy is not going to be consistent. So just from a purely mechanical standpoint, I have a lot of issues with him. And the other big deal that I've noticed is the dude locks on to receivers. Not unusual, not an outlier for a quarterback. But there's a reason that he threw third highest interceptable ball rate, a stat that Football Outsiders came out with, because he has a tendency to stare down the number one and not see safeties or linebackers. So when it comes to home reading, any sort of zone, he can read man fine. Reading zone is a nightmare for him. He does not see the safeties. He does not see the safeties getting ready to pounce. They bait him in the throws that they can make the interceptions on. The picks that he threw last year, bait throws. So that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a guy who needs to learn a lot about progression, who needs to learn that he's fine. If he's not locked down to number one, he can transition to two and three. That's good. But he's not a guy who does a great job of getting that read, seeing where the safeties are, looking off safeties, and creating good throwing spaces for himself with his eyes. He does not do that. He's not that kind of guy. I had something else in the dog barking just made me forget it, so sorry about that. Your turn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've watched him as much as you have, and I'll probably be a dork and watch all seven of his games, maybe one Sunday, maybe this Sunday instead of going to church or something like that. But I've watched probably about a whole game of him, and I watched the Pittsburgh game, and kind of the issues I saw was, like you were saying, about the arm slot, and also where his foot leads. He doesn't really point to the receiver at times. He kind of throws more with his arm and his chest and his legs, and that's a problem. I also kind of agree with the idea that he locks on receivers, but I think part of it, too, is that whenever pressure comes, he doesn't know when to take a sack when he should. Kind of that Ryan Mallett thing where, Mallett led the league in sack rate last year. And it was because he just didn't know when to take a sack. He just threw the ball at somebody every time he was about to go down. And he saw the same sort of thing with Oswald last year, where he just wouldn't go down. Instead, he's trying to force things with the linebacker coming underneath. And he threw in double coverage a lot, too. And that article that Sion Fahey at Football Outsiders wrote that I linked in my post on Monday, it goes into pretty much just all the interceptable passes he threw and all the poor decisions that he makes. And that was, really kind of scary and kind of gut-wrenching to read right after the, optimism was kind of high when it first happened. And I think that some of these things are fixable. He seems like he is, fairly intelligent. He seems like he's the type of guy who can be a leader as well. And I do think he has good arm strength, too. And so if O'Brien can fix his mechanics, if they can watch football 10 hours a day this summer, if he can throw ball to DeAndre Hopkins a lot, I can see it, working out. I just, again, to me, it just goes back to the thing where he's an average quarterback right now, and there's a lot of different things that have to break right for him to be, for him to even be good, let alone, above average.
Yeah, and look, one of the things when we talk about being an above-average quarterback, I think the most important thing that has to go along with that, that has to be together with that, specific label, is that you have to be above average at something, right?
Yeah.
You're Russell Wilson, you're above average at moving, creating time with your feet, and making throws on the run.
Incredible, like the best in the league at, scrambling, making moves on the run, and breaking tackles behind the line of scrimmage,
Yep, and then so another example would be, Tom Brady, accuracy, Aaron Rodgers, accuracy, throwing on the run. Each one of these guys has at least a trait you can point to and say, that is an above-average trait.
Mm-hmm.
What is Brock Osweiler's above-average trait? What is his potential above-average trait?
Yeah, I don't see that at all either. And that was also interesting in the article. I know CN talked about that too, where if you don't have an elite trait, you have to be above average at everything. And also when you watch Oswald, you see him being probably about average at just about everything, below average in some things. And I guess that's two issues where there's not that elite skill, and there's also just not being above average at all the things the quarterback needs to do. And I'm probably going to write something. I assume Brett's going to make a video. I think this is such a big sign that we should probably get two articles on it. And, right now, I'm fine with it. I think he's average right now at the moment. And the other thing, too, that I don't feel so terrible about is also the contract, where his contract's 4 years, $72 million, the $12 million signing bonus, and $37 million that's guaranteed. But they can cut him in 2018, save $15 million cap space, and they come in 2019, they save $17 million cap space. So we're looking at pretty much a 2 to 3 year deal if things don't go well. Do you like the contract too, and are you okay with how much they had to overpay for these first 2 years to bring him to Houston?
I guess that's the biggest stickler for me. I mean, I get it. Once again, what else are they going to do? BFD, you've been bitching about this for 2 years now. What do you expect them to do? Look, this is what will make me comfortable with the signing and the contract and him just even being on the team, is if we take a quarterback in the first or second round. Because right now, to me, this is a very, very short-term decision. It's not a long-term decision. Even the contract points to this being a short-term decision, that we're just going to get a guy, we're going to make the fan base happy so they're shut up about us not having a quarterback. So if they go out and take the quarterback in the first or second round, I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I see a plan here. Because what I don't see is a plan, and I vented about this on the our listserv right when it happened, is this seems to me, once again, this it goes back to the line from the movie The Red, Hunt for the Red October, is even the Ruskies don't take a dump without a plan, son. And what I don't see is a plan. If Brock Osweiler, you really think he's your long-term guy, then why didn't you sign him to a real four-year contract rather than basically a two-year contract?
Yeah, and spread out that money a little bit more from year to year to year instead of front-loading it.
Yep. So we are already treating this as, well, you know, we're DTF and all, but, you know, I'm not ready for the ring yet. And that's not how you treat the quarterback position. You don't treat it as a one-night or a one-week stand. You have to treat it respectfully with the real vision. And I don't get that vibe from the signing. So, you know, I don't hate the signing. I wouldn't have done the signing. I would have taken a completely different strategy.
Yeah, and we'll get to that also in a second. That's what I also about Monday, where I just didn't see the plan at all here, and there really hasn't been a plan at all at the quarterback position. And, you know, I think this all kind of goes back to the 2013 season where Houston goes 2-14. I've talked about on the show, you've talked about on the show. I've wrote probably at least 5 or 6 articles, maybe even more than that, about the regression to the mean, the fact that Houston would be better in 2014 by default. You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick was able to add to a 7-win increase and also better turnover luck. And, you know, those sorts of things led to an increase in 7 wins. And pretty much by default, they had the talent level of at least an 8-win team, especially in that division. And I don't think that the front office or the coaching staff understood that they just needed a quarterback and this team was going to be good again. I know that the Texans are not, you know, really into analytics at all, but this is even like I read Grantland one time, you know, sort of analytics that we're talking about here. And so I think that they went into 2014 thinking that they're going to have to rebuild. And they're like, well, we're going to win through the lines. And they got 3 guys who have yet to make a real impact at all in Houston winning football games to start that draft. And they thought they were going to have to improve the roster elsewhere to make a push, you know, in the future. When that wasn't the case whatsoever, what they needed more than anything was a quarterback. And 2013 was the best chance they've had at getting one, whether it's Bortles, you know, Bridgewater, Carr, I can't even remember, but I remember there being some other guys there in the draft that you could even take and, you know, sit down and teach, you know, Brett Hundley as well. And they ended up with Tom Savage instead. And so from that point on, what's been the best option at quarterback? It's been Brock Osweiler. You know, Nick Foles had very high interception or very low interception rate in 2014. And he wasn't, you know, and we saw what happened in 2015, whenever that changed. He wasn't very good at all. Last year, there was no quarterback at all to get because the best ones went 1 and 2 in the draft. And you know, there was rumors that Philadelphia offered 3 first-round picks to move up to Tennessee, and they said no. So there's no chance to get a quarterback then. And so this year, after, you know, 2 years of ignoring the position, now you end up with the best chance being Brock Osweiler because you have a very good football team because of talent, and you win games. You don't get to draft high ever again. And so you have to make that decision whenever you have a good football team and you're drafting in the top 5 because that's not going to happen very often. You know, it's not like this is the Cleveland Browns we're talking about. And so here we are, and it's 2016. They signed Osweiler as the best option available. But he's the best option available because they didn't have a plan in place at all. They completely misconstrued the talent on this roster and the amount of games they were going to win. And so now this is where they're at. And Osweiler's been the best option available, you know, since 2013. And that's their fault, unless the other thing that they could do this year is taking quarterback. But again, they won 9 games and they're drafting 22nd. And so I think that's probably the biggest frustrating thing to me is that there's just no real plan here. They didn't understand their roster. They don't understand the numbers very well. And they didn't make the best chance to improve at the most important position when they had the best chance to.
Yeah, so to answer Lawrence Person's first question, I don't think Matt and I will be voting for Rick Smith for the Hall of Fame anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess so. But you know, that's kind of how it goes back to for me. And it really, a lot of problems with this roster and the fact they've only won 9 games are mediocre. It really goes back to 2013. And that was, you know, the best chance they've had so far. And so now they have Osweiler, and he has the chance to, you may be good, and right now he's average, and they're paying him a lot of money to be average at the moment. Well, I guess we touched on this earlier, and so you said the Texans should draft a quarterback. Are you thinking that they should draft one in the first or second round, or maybe the third round, or where are you wanting them to draft one, and which quarterback are you interested in right now?
I haven't completed everything, my looks at the draft-eligible quarterbacks for this draft yet, so I don't really have a strong opinion. That's a lie. Wentz is my number one. I'll just put it out there with the bullet. I think the guy is a legit threat to be a top 5 quarterback in the league. I know he doesn't have the, you know, experience per se that many people like to see from him, but I really like the dude. I think he's got the skill set to succeed. That said, let's look back at who the best quarterbacks are, and let's look back at how quarterbacks are developed. And the answer is they really aren't. They're thrown into the fire, and they either succeed or die. There's a lot of reasons for this. It's opportunity. It's, you know, contract sizes, things like that. That's why you don't see Tom Brady being taken in the 6th round very often as a successful and a Hall of Fame quarterback. It just doesn't happen, and there's a lot of reasons. Again, if we're going to address the position, address it with seriousness, that means you're spending no more than a 3rd-round pick for him, because you can point to 2 guys now and say, hey, look, they're 3rd-rounders, and they're pretty darn good, and Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson. But Cousins was always pretty good on the accuracy side of things, so he kind of had that going for him. But Russell Wilson was just kind of a freak. So I think if you're going to be very serious and say, hey, look, we're going to take this position seriously, now and for the future, you spend a 1st or 2nd round pick on a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think it kind of depends on who's available. If Paxton, Lynch, Goff, and Wentz are gone, you know, by 22nd comes, or if, you know, if they're even sitting at 22 and they're there at 12, I think it's worth making the move. And it's also one of those things too, where if you draft whoever you draft in the 1st round, you're not paying them a whole lot of money, and that's very important. And two, let's say that Osweiler is great and you don't need this quarterback that you drafted. You can always flip him for a 1st or 2nd round pick in the future and get a return out of it. You know, it's not like you just take this guy and nothing good's ever going to happen again from it. You're going to be able to get something in the future. And even, you know, Brian Hoyer may get a 6th round pick. I don't think either 3 of those guys are going to be there by the time they pick. I do think that, you know, it's going to be somebody in the Hackenberg, Connor Cook, Dak Prescott sort of, you know, group or the type of guy they'll have available to take in the 2nd or 3rd round. And then when those 3 guys are there, they should take that. And then you have 2 years to develop this rookie quarterback. And then by year 3, whenever you have to make a real decision on Brock Osweiler, you have this young guy who's been in the league for 2 years, and he's ready to start potentially. And so then if Osweiler doesn't work out, you can cut bait, use this rookie quarterback, and then have a seamless transition from – the mediocrity that you have right now to something that may be really good in the future. And so I think that's the best way to do, just kind of handicap and hedge your bets right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's either take it seriously or don't. And I don't think Brock Osweiler is – a lot of people are going to disagree. Valid arguments, again, my very, very strong opinion. And again, I'll state my opinion is biased because I really don't like Brock Osweiler as a quarterback. He looks great in the uniform, you know, if you're into that sort of thing.
Sparkles.
Otherwise, yeah, he really does. You know, he's got that. I think it's also the smarminess. I get really smarm from him. When I'm watching him interview and talk, it's really like very smarmy type stuff. Anyway.
No, he should be wearing a scarf all the time.
Yeah.
Like a white scarf.
Ugh. Yeah. So, there you go. I'll just state that.
We had a question from Texian Army 3495, and he asked, do you believe in Osweiler? And I'm guessing your answer is no. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and merge this in with Foster Child's question. Is you will not be seeing me get a Brock Osweiler tattoo in the very near future. So sorry, y'all.
That says, oh, It's without the apostrophe made to be. Well, I think the other option that the Texans had in this offseason was that to just draft a quarterback in the first round, may potentially move up, and use that cap space and go for defense. And so right now, they're the eighth best defensive DVOA. Right now they finished sixth, and they were eighth last year. So they have a pretty they have a pretty set top 10 defense. And if you even look at I think it's adjusted DVOA. But it's a DVOA that puts more weight towards the end of the year and diminishes the games played at the beginning of the year. They were like fourth in the league in defense. And so you have all this cap space. You're not losing anybody on the defensive side of the ball really at all, except for like Daryl Morris, you know. So your other option you can do is put even more money and talent to your defense and then try to make the leap from, you know, sixth best defense to first best defense, have a rookie quarterback or even, you know, Brian Hoyer again and have him just play it safe, just do enough football to its utmost extreme, try to do what the Broncos did last year and have the best defense in the league and, you know, potentially go 11-5 and get a first round bye, 12-4. Do you like that sort of team building strategy more for this year? And is that what you wish that they did?
Yeah. So, I've dissed the Brock Osweiler thing quite enough. And so here's what I would have focused on this year. Number one, I would have kept Brandon Brooks at any and all costs. I would have paid him what he wanted. I don't care. I do not see the move to Jeff Allen being an upgrade, though I love the Jeff Allen signing. Don't get me wrong. But I would say I would rather have found a center to replace Ben Jones. Our offensive line is the core of our offense, period. Make it better. Offensive lines make running backs better. They make quarterbacks better. Win the battles in the trenches first and foremost. Everything else will fall into place. We saw that in the Super Bowl. We saw that in the divisional game. Got to keep your quarterback upright and healthy or you lose. That it doesn't matter who you've got at quarterback. If they can't throw the ball, they're not going to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would have done. I would have strengthened that core up. Secondly, this team needed a weapon. Ladarius Green would have been number one on my list. Go out and get him in free agency. He went to the Steelers. I think I would have been all over that, actually.
I think like $4 or $5 million a year, too.
Pretty good deal. And the other guy who I really would have loved to, I don't know if we could have competed with the Jaguars for him, but Tayshaun Gibson. Why don't we just strengthen the safety position while we're at it?
Yeah.
We overpaid for Lamar Miller. You and I both have a problem with paying running backs that much money, but, you know, he's a pretty good guy. He's a pretty good football player. So it's really hard to get too upset about that because we had to keep cap space to play with. If you put those weapons, a better safety, you go out and draft, and we'll talk about draft crushes here later tonight, but you go out and get a guy who can also help on your defensive line, get a tight end as a weapon, get a running back as a weapon, you can win a lot of games with Brian Hoyer as your quarterback. You may not win the Super Bowl, but you're going to win a lot of games, and you're at least going to give yourself the opportunity. Instead, we downgraded our offensive line, I think, to a large degree. I mean, we're asking Tony Bergstrom to play center for us. I just can't. That's just vomit-inducing. So our best core unit on offense has now been downgraded, and that hurts the rest of our offense. That's a bad decision. We're going to get Brian Hoyer play from Brock Osweiler next year. I don't care what you think. I do care what you think. It came out wrong. That is what's going to happen. He is not going to all of a sudden become an average quarterback his rookie season. Or his second season in the league, basically. That's not going to happen. So, you know, we're not going to get any better at quarterback, but we're getting worse in our line, and that's not a trade-off I'm really all that excited about. So that's what I would have done. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, where if you're paying your quarterback not $14 million a year, that's a lot of other positions that you can spend money on. And so I think there's that strategy there, like what happened with the Seahawks and Russell Wilson's rookie contract with him out there getting paid, you know, $700,000 a year, they would put so much more money in the rest of their roster. And then whenever his contract came up and Richard Sherman, all those guys on his defense, then they let go of the older veterans to replace with that youth. And now they're having to use UDFAs and stuff, but they have so many really good players that are able to make it work. And so I think it's something similar now, too, where instead of paying Hoyer $5 million, you're paying Osweiler $14 million. And that's about three starters, you know, of a difference. And your quarterback, whenever you pay him that much money, has to make that up. And you know, I think we're pretty agreeable here. I don't know. Like, I don't know investing all that much money in the defense like that. I mean, they had to do something. And, I mean, I guess it's just kind of summarize things important to do. Yeah, I think Osweiler is mediocre right now. He's an average quarterback. I think he has the potential to be good, but a lot of things have to happen. And I think the odds of it occurring are slimmer than the odds of him just being mediocre are. And so I think there's a better potential of him being the 22nd best quarterback than the 12th best quarterback. And, you know, but this goes all back to they had to do something, and that lack of planning and everything really kind of culminates in this one moment. And so we're going to have to see what happens over these next 2 years, which is kind of also weird that the next, you know, we're going to be manacled for the next 2 years to Brock Osweiler quarterback. And that's kind of dictate the direction this franchise goes.
Yeah, yeah. And again, a good argument is, hey, we signed Brock Osweiler. We don't have to address quarterback in the draft. Well, I think we do.
Yeah, I mean,
we signed Lamar Miller. Yeah, we signed Lamar Miller. We don't have to address running back. Okay, well, that point taken. It's a lot of money for a running back, something that's a fungible position. But, hey, you know, we had the cap space. Okay, it's cool. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess to answer the question that Foster Chow asked, BFD, do you have a really awful, terrible tattoo at all?
Yeah. God, I can't even go with that joke here. I was going to make a very off-color joke, but I haven't had enough beer yet. So.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I have no tattoos, Foster Child. I am like 2 years above kind of where that was cool. I had earrings and a mullet. But I was just like a year or two above, older than the when tattoos became super cool and everybody had to get them stuff.
Yeah, if I don't have any at all. I probably got one though if the Rangers won the championship in 2011, and I probably would have got their alternate logo maybe on my butt or something like that, some place nobody would ever see it. But I also have told myself that if I ever move out like Texas for full time and I'm never coming back, that would get a tattoo of a python wearing a sailor hat, eating a little mouse that says Snake Farm on it for the, you know, the greatest Hill Country song ever made, which is Snake Farm by Ryan Whaley Hubbard. So if I ever see myself, you know, living in, you know, Washington or something like that for the rest of my life, then I'll get a tattoo like that on my butt and make whoever I'm around very unhappy about it. But anyways, that was a good question. We didn't get that out of there. So let's talk about Lamar Miller now instead. And after destroying Arian Foster in Miami, they went with the Miami running back to replace him. They pay him about $6 million a year. Both you and I, we both hate paying for running backs. We hate drafting running backs early. You know, there's more Melvin Gordons out there than Todd Gurley's. But that being said, I do like the signing a lot. The Texans on offense, they really need speed. I mean, it's just so evident whenever you watch every skilled player being unable to break a tackle. You watch every skilled player run. If there's a hole, he runs 5 yards and he goes down. You don't see any sort of, you know, breakaways or nobody misses at all. And it's just such a slogging, plowing offense where wherever you're catching the ball, that's where you're going down. Or wherever the hole closes, that's where you're going down. And so Miller offers this. He's a guy who can break a lot of tackles. He has great vision. He ran a 4.440. Oh, and also, by the way, he's a fourth-round pick, too, as well. And then also he's underused, too, in Miami, and he's young. He's just 24 years old. In Miami, the most carries he had was just 216. And in that year, in 2014, he was fourth in DVOA and DYAR. And so he was also a very efficient back. I think he had like 5.1 yards per carry that year. And so because of the culmination of his speed, his quickness, his agility, his vision, his age, the fact that he hasn't been hit a lot, you know, I really do like the signing. I think it was important for Houston to get a guy like this, even though maybe they could have found a guy like this in the fourth round instead. But I do like the Miller signing. How about you? I know you don't like running backs or being paying this much for them, but do you like it in this case?
Yeah, I think this one, when I saw it, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Really? We gave him that much? But as I digested it, if there's a guy in the league that I would point to, you know, who kind of his age group, not a younger guy, wow, maybe would Gurley be the only exception? Wow, okay. Well, I think I just came to the realization that Lamar Miller is the guy who I would want on my team. It's the low mileage, again, the explosiveness you mentioned. The guy's fast. I draft him in Madden every freaking draft I do because he's so fast. that's the guy. Yeah, I mean, he really is. I think if I could have one running back in the league, that's not named Todd Gurley. I'm having a hard time thinking of anybody I'd want more than Lamar Miller.
Maybe David Johnson from Arizona.
Yeah,
Thomas Rawls. Yeah, but he broke his ankle. He's the best running back in the league last year.
He was, but I see him as a guy who does not age well.
Yeah,
that's my problem with him. Yeah, because I see a lot of Jamal Charles and Lamar Miller. I see a guy who's going to have some quicks. Yeah, so he's going to have some quicks as he gets older. He's got so much of them. So yeah, I think it's too much money. But in this case, hey, fine. You got guys. We got and girls. I'm being so sexist tonight. Yeah, we've got a guy that we can turn into a top three or four running back in the league on the team. And when you have it, you know, that's a great opportunity right there and a very legit shot at being the best running back in the league.
Do you have any hesitation at all that he can't be the type of running back who can carry entire offense on his own just because he hasn't had that workload?
And that goes back to how you utilize guys. I would never give the guy the rock, at least from a rushing standpoint, 300 times a year. I would limit it to 250, limit the hits. You've got other guys on your team you can give your main guy a breather to. I want him to be the type of guy that's catching balls out of the backfield as well. It's a usage thing for me. I'd always want somebody to pair. That's why running backs, we kind of consider them more fungible, is because they get hurt. Other guys,
right,
Lamar Miller is
not important now.
Yeah, yep. So Lamar Miller, though, he's the kind of guy who can give you true legitimate number one production at 250 totes a year.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point you made, too, is that there's, in today's NFL, I mean, there's just too much, like, research, there's too many information out there, there's too many examples of it occurring where you just destroy a guy's career in 3 years by giving the ball 300 times a year. You don't need to do that at all. Why? You need two running backs who can each get 200 carries. One, you know, be a guy like Miller who's going to be better than your second guy. And you split the workload between the two so then you can able to have this investment of $6 million a year that can last the entire span of his contract without him hurting his groin or his knee or his ankle. And you saw that with Foster where you can only get 3 years out of a guy when he's getting that many carries. And it's great to have him. It's great to have that. But it's better to be able to split the workload between two running backs. And you see the really smart teams throughout the years have two or three backs that they can switch off to and also keep some pressure throughout the game. And they're able to have more of an impact whenever they're out there instead of just running for 4 yards over and over again. Unless you have a freak like Adrian Peterson, of course, but that's the exception, not the norm. And so I do hope with Miller this year, you talked about also, just because they signed Miller doesn't mean they shouldn't draft a running back. They should definitely draft a running back in the fourth or fifth round and a guy who offers speed again too. Get a guy who can make guys miss, who can break tackles, who has legitimate speed instead of all these plotters that they currently have on the roster.
Yeah, if that kid from Marshall from Georgia is there in the fourth round, I'm on him like me on a beer.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you to never have to watch Alfred Blue get 30 carries again?
Let's just say that erection lasted more than 4 hours because that was one of my first thoughts.
He doesn't fumble then.
He doesn't fumble. You're right. So, and this goes back, and I just want to, make really accent a point that I made earlier. That's what I mean when I say that a great offensive line makes your players better. Alfred Blue looked serviceable at times last year because even I could have run through the holes that were being created for him. Even I could have hit those spaces, and I'm 45 years old with 7 knee surgeries. Look, I mean, they were that big. So if a guy like Alfred Blue can do that, that's why you want to put your running back behind a good to great offensive line. Now, we downgraded two positions.
Yeah,
I don't know what we're going to do with Suafila, but I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, that's what's important to me. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about offensive line now. And Brandon Brooks left to Philadelphia in a 5-year, $40 million contract. And I love Brandon Brooks, and this is one of the cases where I was really right about him and Derek Newton being a lot better than everybody said they were. Everybody said both these guys are terrible. You shouldn't be on this team. You seen the comments, saw things in the mass set from it too. And they're both, they're guys who have elite strength though, and they're both really big. And it was one of those things where Brooks had better footwork than Newton ever did. But if their footwork got up to par, then they're going to turn into monsters, and this is what happened. And they're just great, just demolishing guys on the right side of the line. And so in Philadelphia, he gets to play between either Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson or Jason Kelsey and Jason Peters. And Philadelphia hasn't had any good guards since Chip Kelly got rid of Harriman and Evan Mathis because he thought that one of the main reasons why their offensive line was so good was because of their guard play. He thought that was a position that really wasn't that important. And so Philadelphia went and got, I guess, the best guard off the market, Ozamelli doesn't play, if he plays left tackle in Oakland. But anyways, you know, I'm happy for Brooks. He got a lot of money. He's going to be great there, and he's going to play in a perfect situation next to two, you know, potential all-pro, Pro Bowl players there. Were you emotionally upset at all that, you know, Bruden's been broken up?
No, totally. I kind of expected Ben Jones to go. He's, again, very average player. Didn't think we'd really want to put the dough out for him, especially when he's not a $4 million a year kind of player. And it all comes down to, you know, is your player cost effective and you're not named Zach Dials. So losing him was kind of an expectation. I really thought we'd hold on to Brandon Brooks. Jeff Allen has a lot of good going for him. It reminds me a lot of the Wade Smith signing from several years ago. We got a guy from the Chiefs who's not being properly utilized. We stuck him in our system, and, of course, he became a Pro Bowler, Pro Bowl Wade Smith. Of course, he was 2 years too late to his actual good seasons, but
that was a fun meme.
That was a fun meme. But Jeff Allen has a lot of talent. He's not nearly as proven, doesn't have the track record. So right now, until he proves something to me he's a downgrade. But dude has upside. Brandon Brooks, dude, I was so on board when you were drafted. I remember I was watching the draft with Tim when you were drafted. So I'm sad to see you go.
Yeah, and I was also, you know, I use Twitter, especially during work or whatever, and see some things. And it was really sad in this offseason to see Derek Nude on there asking Brandon Brooks when they wanted to go fishing. He would send pictures of his Jordans, and like, yeah, right side, always wearing our Jordans or whatever. And now all that's gone. Derek Newton's, you know, somebody should be checking on him. I'm afraid he hasn't been eating it all his last, you know, week. He's so heartbroken and devastating. And so, I mean, just I like to watch offensive line, you know, all 22. And just, it's going to be sad not watching those two guys just destroy people on the right side of the line. They were so good at it for the last 4 years, and they opened up so many holes. And they were just mean and big and strong and nasty. And so it is, you know, upsetting to see that go. You did touch on Jeff Allen, who they replaced him with. And I watched Allen play twice this year. Well, I guess more than that, because I watched all that film for that wild card preview I wrote before the Chiefs game. And he's a guy who is really mean. He's really nasty. And that entire Chiefs offensive line, they were kind of like, they're downright dirty, especially Eric Fisher. They're just kind of a dirty offensive line that uses physicality, hitting guys late, making sure, try and knock somebody down every single play, hitting guys in the side as they're, you know, walking around, and just trying to get people's heads because they're not that good. They weren't that good of an offensive line. They had to use meanness and nastiness and physicality to make up for the problems that things they weren't very good at. And so with Allen, you see a guy who's like Brooks for the fact that he's really big, he's really strong. But he doesn't have the footwork, really. He has problem on the second level, which was the biggest problem on his offensive line last year, is getting to that second level, making blocks on linebackers. And so you're getting a guy who is like new in the fact that he's really strong, but he doesn't have the all-around game that Brooks has. And the kind of strange thing for me in this whole signing was that they front-loaded his contract, too, to help lure him away from Kansas City. And also, Brooks only got only an extra $1 million a year and 1 year longer than Allen. So if you look at Allen, he got 4 years, $28 million. So he just got 1 year less and $1 million less per year than Brooks did. And so it's strange to me that they just didn't match that, pay for the extra year because Brooks is going to be 31 by the time that contract is up, and pay the extra $1 million too. And so I'm just kind of that was the one thing that was weird to me, just the disconnect there, where there was not that much of a difference between Allen and Brooks's contract.
Yeah, so Matt, you played offensive line. How important is communication and cohesiveness when it comes to playing the offensive line?
It's very important whenever the guy next to you that you guys are on the same page. And I think the communication aspect, I think that part kind of gets over-discussed, but it's mainly like knowing like how you guys fit. You know, it's kind of like running, like you play basketball, somebody, you give them that look, and you know that you're going to run a give and go. I think because more people play basketball than offensive line out there. And so it's just, whenever, like, for example, if you're running a double team together, you need to understand, like, where exactly your feet are going to be, how you guys are going to get hip to hip, making sure you punch at the same time and all that timing. And it's not anything you really even think about all whenever you're playing, but when just whenever you click with that guy next to you, it's just something that just happens on those plays. And so I think it's mostly more about the spatial awareness of the guy next to you more so than the communication. But it is
yeah,
very
but it's
important
still,
to answer your question. Yeah, it's very, very important.
Yeah, I think the basketball analogy is great because that it's exactly – I mean, you know, I played a lot of basketball back in the day, even though it's short. But I played a lot, and there were always guys. There's always the one or two guys that I always seem to play with, and we always wanted to be on the same team together because I would run point, and one of the guys was a forward, the other was kind of played a five, but it was great because I always knew where they were going to be. I knew when they wanted the ball, when they didn't want the ball. It was all that unspoken communication. I never saw these dudes outside of playing ball, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to being on the court, we work like clockwork. And to me, that's what the offensive line kind of does. That's why there needs the continuity and the cohesion of the offensive line is so important. And that's why I think that losing Brooks and even losing Jones is a bigger deal than it seems, because I think we're looking at, what, 8 months or 8 games minimum until we can start working on that cohesiveness again.
Yeah.
It's a big deal to me. Look at the sorry to keep going on this. I'm going to defensive lines. We sucked when our offensive lines sucked. We were good when our offensive lines were good to great. And the Texans have had great offensive lines in the very recent future. And so I think that's a really big loss. It's all of a sudden now we've gone from an above-average offensive line to I think we're slightly below average right now.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that is also whenever you look at that run they had after at that Tennessee game on when they won, you know, they went 6-2 or whatever, made the playoffs. The biggest thing that you kind of saw on defense, you know, was starting Andre Howell playing a lot more tight coverage, playing a lot more aggressive style of defense, creating more turnovers, and that's sort of things where you saw that changed the defense. You know, starting Archer McKinney, giving the younger guys more reps rather than these old guys who, you know, who are just awful. And on offense, what you saw is that the offensive line that they wanted to use in August finally started in November, and they were a big reason why they won that Bengals game. I mean, they were just moving on the front level over and over again. Like I said before, they just had problems against the second level, and that is hard. That's what leads to, you know, a lot more 5-yard runs rather than 12-yard runs. But they were great, and they pass protected very well too. And you are going to lose something by losing those two guys, and I think, you know, Brooks especially. And looking at the roster now, you're going to see probably Brown left tackle, Suafio left guard, Allen. I'm sorry about that. Brown
Bergstrom
left tackle. Maybe Bergstrom at center. I don't know. I would hope that they draft somebody potentially. There's still some holes there.
I'll just say right now he's terrible. I mean, he couldn't even crack the Raiders starting lineup, and the Raiders for the last 4 years, and the Raiders have had one of the worst offensive lines in the league. He is specifically somebody I've looked at and said, you are terrible watching the Raiders play.
Yeah,
go
I know
ahead.
He only played 250 snaps last year, but you would hope that they would take a guy in the fifth round, sixth round, maybe even sign another veteran. And then you have Alan Newton on the right tackle, and then you have Chris Clark as a third offensive tackle. And so you're going to see a drop-off on the offensive line. It's not as good without Bram Brooks. It's not – you know, Jones is consistently average, but he's still very consistent. He's played every offensive snap last year. And so even though he has problems moving guys on the front level and in the second level and having that lack of just, like, I guess, athletic ability – he still played every snap, and that's an important thing for a center to do for that continuity on the line. And so I do think the offensive line is going to be, you know, worse this year.
Yep, I agree.
I guess real fast, we don't have to make this a real long discussion at all, but the Texans had the 32nd worst special teams last year again, according to DVOA. The only team that was close to them as far as being just god-awful was the San Diego Chargers. They also had the worst punting unit in the NFL. They also were 28th in yards average starting field position after punts, and a lot of that's on Shane Leckler, and they re-signed him to a 1-year, $1.2 million deal. And he's cool, but he's not a good punter at all anymore. And they also re-signed Nick Novak to a 1-year, $800,000 deal. And the Houston was 28th in kickoff in touchback rate on kickoffs. He also was only 2-for-5 on kicks over 50 yards. never had making any clutch kicks, and they also re-signed him too. Now, I know for me, I think they would have been better off either drafting UDFAs or find some guy off the couch or off the street or whatever metaphor you want to use that would be better than either Leckler or Novak. And I wasn't surprised at all that they re-signed these guys, since that's what the Texans do. But they're not putting the talent in the special teams changes. They're just assuming that it's all coaching. And so were you upset at all that they re-signed Leckler and Novak, and were you surprised?
No, I think your quote was you when you've got the two worst kicking units in the NFL, that of course these are the guys you want to re-sign first and foremost. That was just great. This is at those contract levels, those are basically veteran minimum in all reality. That's the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
You're not going to get much lower than that. So there's no skin off your teeth bringing in UDFAs to come in and compete for jobs with them. And I hope that's the long-term plan. You have a body, it's mostly warm, and so you can head into training camp and say, look, I've got kicker, I've got punter, and go sign a couple guys off the street for competition and see if you can find something out there better.
Yeah.
Pro tip, man, you can find something better, Rick.
Yeah, and I really like that TTQ, I don't even know if I said that right, but the tweet Tim sends out right now, he asked him about Leckler. And everybody loves Leckler. I don't know why. It's not like he's been here for 15 years. But everybody just, you know, fucking loves the shit out of Shane Leckler. And he's not good, and I really don't get it at all. I mean, I guess he ate barbecue once on HBO. But he sucks, though. And there's, you know, it's the numbers are fairly evident. It's easy to see he's not good. Whenever you watch him play, you see most of his punts are either caught at the 25-yard line with a fair catch, or they go out of bounds in the back of the end zone. But every so often, there's the occasional one that rolls to the 3-yard line, and then Dick Ebersole craps his pants. Then, oh, another great Leckler punt. And it's like every single time he does anything good, it becomes so much more magnified, and that puts in your brain that he's good, but he's just really just, you know, dog crap at punting at this point in his career.
Yeah, it was funny when the Chiefs, everybody was so upset at the Chiefs fans. And I think, you know, the first game of the season, and one of the funniest things I saw was, you know, the Chiefs fans going, you know, Shane Leckler's not that good. And they're like, oh, he's much better than Dustin Colquitt. I'm like, if you watch Dustin Colquitt, he's like really freaking good.
Yeah.
And that was funny. Like, insulting Shane Leckler was just totally verboten, totally off the.
I guess because he's from Houston too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Kubiak's from Houston. Yeah. Everybody likes to be mean to him. Well, do you think these moves the Texans made will make some favorites in the AFC South?
No. No, I don't. And I think the biggest reason is, let's look at how this team has been successful the last 2 years. And that's because we get to play the flaming wreckage of the rest of the AFC South six times a year. We get to play the baby-eating sister. God, where's my daughter? My daughter's been running around. I don't want to say that in front of her. The baby-eating sister fuckers of Mesopotamia twice a year. The Jacksonville glitter kitties. And the Clots. The Clots. And I'm kind of addressing, you know, somebody asked a question about the other teams in the division, so I'm kind of addressing that as I'm going along. The Clots did nothing. Andrew Luck should just, you know, if when Gregson comes to my door with the contract, if I'm Andrew Luck, I'm kicking him in the nuts and sending him away. There is no way I would play another snap for Ryan Gregson if I'm Andrew Luck. I'm not even kidding. I'm gone. Jacksonville, however, Malik Jackson, Tayshaun Gibson, Prince and Nakamura. They just got three starters on defense, guys.
You got
this team.
Jacksonville got Mukamara.
Yep. And Tayshaun Gibson. They got three guys, and they might have overpaid for a couple of them, but they got them. And all of a sudden, that defense is now going from, and they get Dante Fowler back from injury.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, that defense has gone from crap on a cracker to maybe almost average. That's a big deal.
Maybe
that
cheese on a cracker.
Yep, because what Malik Jackson's going to do to Tony Bergstrom and possibly to Jeff Allen is he's going to – and Suofilo is he's going to murder those guys.
Yeah.
Malik Jackson's elite. He's going to kill our interior pass protection. Dante Fowler off the edge with that sort of speed, he's going to create problems for Dwayne Brown. All of a sudden, we're looking at a Jacksonville Jaguars team with an above-average, young, ascending offense and a average defense. The coaching's bad. Gus Bradley's bad. So we have that on our side. But they have talent now, and they haven't had talent like this in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So I do not think we're necessarily the clear favorite. I think there is an argument to be made for the Texans because of our defensive talents. Offensively, all of a sudden, when we were strong, we're now weak. And so it's going to make things a little bit more difficult for us in that way. I do think we're by a nose is a better talent, but Jacksonville all of a sudden looks a heck of a lot better on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we could even do whenever we get close to the season, I'd like to do a season preview show for each one of these teams, maybe call on some of the other SB Nation losers out there from another side and talk about these teams too. But I think Houston is the favorite just because now that they have a quarterback who isn't Brian Hoyer, there's the potential for this team to be better. I do think the one thing that's interesting is that the defense isn't going to get any better next year. They're going to probably be a top 10 defense, you know, 8th in DVOA or so. It's not going to be any better than that. And next year, you're going to have to, if they're going to improve from 9 wins to 11 wins against a much tougher schedule, it's going to have to come from the offense. And so that's all going to come from Lamar Miller, Brock Osweiler, and the decisions they make in the draft. And so if Osweiler can be above average, then the Texans, you know, can make that next little push or whatever, because the defense isn't going to get any better at all. And I think he's average right now, and so I don't think they're going to be much better, but the potential there is still there. I do like Jacksonville. I mean, I'd like to move him on defense. I don't think Malik Jackson's that great, but I think he's a good run defender. Whenever he goes against one-on-one blocks, he's really disciplined. I think he's just a whatever pass rusher. And I had 4 games of film on him the other day. And then but it's also just kind of – with them, it's going to come down to if Bortles can stop being an idiot and don't make those, like, 4 Geno Smith sort of just dumbass throws every game. And Tennessee should be better, too, with the new weapons that they have on offense, and they're going all in their offensive line again as well. Andrew Luck is still a, oh my God, you know, franchise quarterback. So the NFC South is going to be a lot better than it was the years before, and it's going to be a lot more interesting this year than it has been the last 2 years.
Yeah, and let's look at what Tennessee's done. They signed Ben Jones from us, which is as mediocre as Ben Jones is, that was still a tremendous signing for them because he's a heck of a lot better than the crap they – I think they literally trotted out the worst centers in football last year.
Yeah, the guy who came – I like Brian Schwenke. I think he's an above-average player. He's just been hurt. The guy that took his place was really bad. But I think Schwenke's better than Jones. It's just problems with injuries with him. But everybody – really, like, all the Tennessee Titans fans hate Schwenke. And I wrote that, 4,000-word article or so on their offensive line. Schwenke's a good player. He'd be great in his zone runs. He'd be cool if Houston could trade for him.
Yeah. Well, we don't run that scheme. We don't know what scheme we run.
Yeah, that's a good point, too.
So they also traded for DeMarco Murray. Again, running back, lots of mileage, lots of issues with DeMarco Murray. But he's still – I mean, think about what they've been trotting out at running back for the last 3 or 4 years since CJ ? K was done. They've been trotting out crap, absolute crap. So that's a tremendous upgrade. Look, when you're upgrading from the worst in the league to – below average, slightly below average, average, that's a tremendous upgrade for that position, and that's what they did at running back, too.
Yeah.
Who's the wide receiver they signed? I can't remember the wide receiver.
Rashard Matthews.
Rashard Matthews. Solid signing. There you go. So there's another talented guy. Get you some quicks out there.
That's what they need.
They needed somebody for Marcus Mariota. So all of a sudden, Marcus Mariota. Oh, and the one more thing I don't want to forget because this is the most important part. The Titans are going to draft Jeremy Tunsil. And there's somebody asked, who's your draft crush? Jeremy Tunsil. That is a left tackle. That is a true shutdown quality left tackle right there, y'all. So they have upgraded their offensive line, upgraded their running back, upgraded their wide receiving core. They're still shit on defense. But that's a big
change. Their pass rush is good.
In a
small sample size.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's not – we have watched as the Titans and the Glitter Kitties have upgraded tremendously on each side of the ball. And I don't know how much of an upgrade we really did on the offseason between Osweiler and Lamar Miller.
Yeah.
It feels more like we've stuck in place.
Yeah, and I mean, I think your rise starts with the tight ends, and I like the Rishard Matthews sign for them. He doesn't catch very well, but he's quick and he can run short routes. And look at that offense. What was the problem last year? Well, they have Dorial Green Beckham, Kendall Wright. Those are both mainly deep threat receivers, and they had Delanie Walker, and he attacked the middle of the field as well. But they didn't have anybody who could run short routes, could run slant routes, who could run out routes, who could run dig routes, who could run flats and those sorts of things. And so they have that automatically with Rishard Matthews. So now Mariota can go there. He can make those throws. And then with DeMarco Murray, they have a really good downhill runner. And so now you're looking at an offensive line of Jones, Luan, Chance Warmack, Jeremiah Patazzi is probably going to play right guard for them. And he was the worst right tackle I've ever seen, but he's a good guard. He's good at run blocking, good in the second level. And then if you have tons of left tackle, that's an offense that you can, it could be good, And then on the defense side, their secondary is crap, but their front seven was good in whenever they weren't down by 35 points. So it's kind of hard to tell what went on there. And then I think another thing about the AFC South is interesting is that if you look at the quarterbacks, you have three teams with quarterbacks who are younger than 25 years old, and Andrew Luck, Mariota, and Blake Bortles. If you have their draft position, you get the number five for the if you have the number one pick and the two number two picks. And then the Texans have, great defense that is much better than any of theirs. And then they have Osweiler. And so there's just such a disconnect between what the other three teams have gone about building their team and what the Texans have done.
Yep. And then, the Jaguars truly are trying to address their defensive woes. And they, I love Malik Jackson. I have loved him for a couple of years now. Total man crush.
Yeah. I'll write about him. I'll send you a link whenever I get it done. Well, let's go through these reader questions that we have now. I really don't have any other bullet points or whatever that we wrote out to go through. The first couple questions we have from Lawrence Pearson. And so he was just asking our odds on the following statements. And so we can kind of do like a PTI sort of thing where you just give a probability of this thing being better or worse, I guess, or a probability of this event occurring. So probability that Osweiler is a better than average quarterback.
Better than average quarterback?
Yeah, this season.
This season?
Yeah.
5%.
Okay, I'm going to go 20%. Lamar Miller improves the running game, and the running game DVOA last year was -16.2%, which was 26th.
I think he does. I'll take the over on that one.
What
I need to give percentage. A probability of 65%.
I'm going to give that a 95% because there's no way it's going to be as bad as it was last year. If somebody can actually break a tackle, And then the offensive line takes a big step back. Not decreases some, but takes a big step back is what we were asked.
Oh, okay. Big step back, I'd say 10%.
Yeah, I would say 10% too. I think they're probably about 15% as good as they were this year with the changes they made. And then the probability that the Texans make the Super Bowl in 2017, and I guess how much you would say it's jumped since they signed Osweiler?
I just because I don't see much of a difference between Osweiler and Hoyer, they see the Super Bowl 3%.
Yeah, I would say it went from 3% to 5%. So Osweiler's really moved the needle for us. And those questions were from Lawrence Pearson. And we have another really good question from him, too. And you guys asked great questions tonight. Thank you.
Yeah.
Y'all were terrific. Y'all were great. We're having a great podcast here. So Rick Smith has received a lot of criticism over the years, including calls for his firing. Do you think such criticism has been justified? Do you think the Texans' recent popular free agent moves will silence that criticism? And where would you rank Rick Smith among all NFL GMs? And this was, again, from Lawrence Pearson.
I think it's Pearson, not Pearson, just saying.
Pearson, yeah. He's a good Pearson.
No, it's Lawrence Pearson.
I'm just joking around.
Okay. Here's the biggest problem with the Texans is we don't know. Gary Kubiak clearly took his guys as a head coach. Son of Bum clearly took his guys as defensive coordinator. They worked it out who was doing what. It's very clear Bill O'Brien is running this team and to a large extent the personnel decisions right now.
Yeah.
So how much does Rick Smith, how much credit does he deserve, how much blame does he deserve? And the answer is I really don't know, because I don't know how much of an actual role he has in personnel decisions at this point in time. It's been clear to me since 2006, and let's be clear, that wasn't Charlie Casserly's draft, that was not Rick Smith's draft, that was Gary Kubiak's draft, and it was the best draft in our history by far, that Gary Kubiak was in charge of most personnel decisions from 2006 until the end. And to me, it's pretty clear Bill O'Brien's doing the same thing. I think his first couple of drafts kind of very much point to that, because he wanted to get bigger, and he got bigger. Now, the guys didn't necessarily see the field, but he got bigger. So I don't know where Rick Smith falls into that equation. What I do know is that the Houston Texans have never been better than 9-7. What I do know is that we have had entire drafts outside of the first round that took a giant shit on the plate and tried to serve it up as dessert. I don't know where that blame falls, but we are the same team, basically, it seems like we've been since about 2007. We lack athleticism. We lack speed. Our special teams consistently suck. I don't know if that's Rick Smith, but when you start looking at what has consistently sucked over the years, and you look at who's been around over those years, Rick Smith is really the only fixed variable in these equations. So where do I think he falls in the GMs? He's below average. Why? Because we are we've never been better than 9-7, and aside from 2013, never really been much worse than 8-8.
Yeah. Well, I think for Rick Smith, I like Rick Smith more than most people, just because they hit in the first round. Aside from Clowney and Amobi Okoye, and Clowney I still think is really good. He just needs to be healthy for an entire year. But they've hit in the first round every single year, and most teams don't do that. It's very difficult to get your first round pick right. It's one of those things that you kind of have to do, because then you get that cheaper source of labor from it. And they've hit in the first round, and it's very lucky and very difficult to do, and they've done that. And that's, a big thing for me. The second round, the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round, not finding guys then, that leads to a lack of depth and, the problems that you can see on the roster whenever you have no second wide receiver or whatever. And those are the kind of – or taking DeVere Posey instead of Russell Wilson. And so those are the issues, are just their inability to draft later on. But he manages the salary cap very well. He signs guys before they hit free agency that are important. And – they hit in the first round of draft. So that's an important one. I'm still confused about that. Just give him one more year, one more extra $1 million, and I'll match the Eagles. But because of those reasons, I do think that, I would say he's probably a top 15 GM, maybe top 10, but towards the bottom of the 10 mark. And it's just because of those three things. Hitting the first round is difficult to do. They've done that, and they've done that consistently.
Yeah, well, second round's been a nightmare.
Yeah,
we don't have a real quarterback on the roster.
Yeah, those are all very important points too. I do think what's interesting also is that this Osweiler thing has turned Rick Smith into a genius out of nowhere. Nobody wants him fired at all anymore, because they did bring in Osweiler, and I just don't understand the logic at all for that.
Well, because everybody's excited. We got a quarterback. Look, it's not Brian Hoyer. It's not Ryan Fitzpatrick. This guy is only 26, and he's really tall. And he says all the right things.
And he sparkles when the sun's out, and his parents are carnies. Do you have a –
And his parents – well, I don't know. That one's on the plus sign for me. If his parents are carnies, that's pretty awesome.
He knows the perils of the road. Yeah, we could probably write that every week for whenever we do incompletions this season. The Brock Osweiler travel tip he learned from his parents.
We should get in touch with his parents. That would be awesome.
Yeah, maybe give him a podcast.
Yeah.
Well, so J.J. Watts on Brace asked, do you have a draft crush on anyone? You said Laremy Tunsil. Is there anybody else at all that you have just fallen madly in love with?
Vernon Butler. He's comp to Muhammad Wilkerson. I see it. I really freaking see it. I would be so, so happy if he's our pick at 22. He's a guy who can come out and he can give you 850, 900 snaps as a rookie, quality snaps. He can play all three downs. He's a guy who can help you get to the pass rusher. He's a guy you can take out to give a breather on third down. So, wow. I think if we go, this is, you know, again, I'm going back to the winning formulas. Broncos won because, right? Broncos won because they could get to the other team's quarterbacks. They were helped by the Patriots and by the Panthers because neither of those offensive lines could play worth a shit. Because it goes back to every game is won in the trenches. You win and lose in the trenches, period. Give me another guy in the trench, like, who can do damage, like a Malik Jackson. Maybe he's the next, Vernon Butler's the next Malik Jackson. Give me a guy who can do the damage, and I will win you football games. So he is, right now, he's at the top. But there's several guys. I mean, DeForest Buckner, clearly, we're never going to get him. Jerron Reed, you know, there's a lot of guys out there I think who can come in, play the five-tech defensive end position for us, and just wreak havoc. That's what I want.
Okay, so you want defensive end in the draft, is that what you're saying, in the first round?
Depending on who's there at quarterback.
Okay.
So, I mean, the depth at defensive end is so deep, you know, it's really awesome. DFD.
Yeah.
it depends on who's there.
Yeah, I was watching Broncos' video from the Super Bowl specifically, and Von Miller got me pregnant, and that's how good he was in that game. And it's just incredible watching him and DeMarcus Ware just run right past NFL offensive tackles, and they can't do anything about it. And just, like, how well they bend their hips and how well they punch. And Von Miller was better, had the best game I've ever seen in the Super Bowl as far as just being disruptive and winning a game, aside from, you know, J.J. Watt in that Buffalo Bills game where he had this, you know, 12 hits without a sack and the pick six that won that game. And he was just remarkable for that. The other question that we have is from, I guess with my draft crush, I really like Jared Goff a lot. I think I think he's going to be great. And it really sucks Houston doesn't get the chance to be able to take him at all this year. But the last question we have is from Bled. And this is a really good question. It's interesting. And I was thinking about this too, at the free agency, how much of the money that went to pass rushing, how much of it was just a case of teams having all this, you know, cap space and these were just good pass rushers available. Or if these teams just watched the Denver Broncos and were like, well, we, you know, having a really incredible pass rush is very important. We're going to spend a lot of money at it. But he said, looking back at last year, Whitney Merciless got 4 years, $26 million, $6.5 million a year. Olivier Vernon got 5 years, $85 million, $17 million a year with the Giants. These are both edge rushers. They're both 25 years old. They both just completed their fourth year in the NFL. And then if you look at the stats, they're also comparable. Whitney Merciless had 174 tackles, 30 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, 2 fumble recoveries, 3 passes defended, 18 run stuffs in 63 games. Vernon had 196 tackles, 29 sacks, 4 forced fumbles, 0 fumble recoveries, 0 passes defended, 20 run stuffs in 64 games. Now, do you think what type of contract do you think Merciless would have got this year, and why do you think that Vernon got so much, that Malik Jackson got so much? Is this a case of just these are really great players, or is this just teams trying to mimic the Broncos to understand that how much of an impact a pass rush can have after their run last year?
I think there are a couple things at play here. Number one is Merciless. After the 2014 season, I mean, how many jokes did we make that Whitney Merciless led the team in unblocked sacks, or they led the team in, you know, garbage sacks? Because that's all he could get. That's all he was capable of,
yeah.
Right? So he kind of got the contract he had earned because, hey, you know what? He's pretty okay. The choices also came down to, are we going to re-sign Brooks Reed, who was very, very clearly the only guy to give up on the 2013 season. In fact, I'll never respect Brooks Reed after the crap he pulled off in 2013. He was ridiculously awful.
Yeah, I know you love that video of him just laying there.
He pulled a Haynesworth. He pulled a freaking Haynesworth. My goodness. So, you know, we're not going to sign Brooks Reed. Whitney Merciless, you're pretty good. You know, we're going to re-up you. I think Merciless got the contract he deserved. Now, what we didn't know is that he was going to really build upon that, and he was quite a force this year. He got a lot of extra snaps we didn't think he'd get because Clowney was out. But he deserves all the accolades he's getting for his 2015 season. Now, Vernon is a great comp, and it's a great question, and it's a great point to make as well. Vernon is a little bit longer and leaner than Merciless, but he's got the same exact track record. So you're going to take the guy who just looks better in the uniform, or are you going to take the guy who's putting up the numbers? And I think we just happen to be, and I think luck, because luck plays a big part of this, right? We got lucky for getting Merciless for that contract and with the numbers he's putting up. And the Giants are going to have really high expectations for Vernon, and I don't know if he can deliver them. So, you know, sometimes things just kind of work out. And we were very fortunate to be on the good side of a deal.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched Vernon when I wrote that Cameron Wake article this year, and he was very underwhelming. And it wasn't until Cameron Wake was gone that he took off. And I don't know if it was because he got to rush against right tackles instead of left tackles, and that was why. But, I mean, he just didn't do anything at all for me. I like Cameron Wake, who's such a great speed rusher. But, yeah, I do think if Merciless hits the open market, though, this year, he's going to get paid $13 million a year or so, $14 million a year. And I guess it's just like we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago, where the salary cap just slowly rolled over, and then they have an avalanche of cap space. Pass rushing is, you know, really important. And also teams just lack talent on defense with cap space. And, I mean, you could have saw, you know, Tennessee give him a bunch of money. The Giants probably wouldn't have, but the Jaguars potentially could have. For him to play that Leo position, or that I can't remember it. I don't want to try to sound smart when I'm not, but have him play that strong side linebacker that rushes as well too. And so he would have got a lot of money this year. The Falcons probably would have given him a lot of money to play outside linebacker too potentially. And so, you know, Houston got lucky. He was a lot better this year, and it's been kind of surprising to see the growth with him. And then a lot of it's just been athletically too, where just he has better pass rushing moves, but he just looks faster. He's very strong, too. And I just hope Clowney's healthy next year so we have to watch John Simon play football at all anymore.
Yeah, true story. And again, I'll go on the record. Whitney Merciless was the guy who I wanted in the first that year. He's who I wanted. I really enjoyed his college tape. Really, he was so explosive, and he just seemed to be slower as a pro. And some guys do that. I mean, it's a different speed of the game. And so Merciless kind of went from the guy who's the – you know, the awesome number one draft pick to, you know, is this guy a bust? But you could see all of a sudden he's stronger. He sets the edge against the run.
I never expected him to do that.
And you watch his college tape and you're going, this guy's never going to stop the run. He's a one-dimensional guy. Get to the quarterback. So all of a sudden you've got a guy who's gone from pass rushing specialist off the edge to setting the edge to occasionally getting the quarterback to being, oh my goodness, this guy's the entire package. And that doesn't happen very often. So, you know, kudos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and well, I just wanted to say one more. As far as if Vernon would have signed with Jacksonville, I would officially anoint them the team to beat in the AFC South. I think he would have made that much of a – he's not great. You're right, he's underwhelming. But I think he makes that much of a difference.
He got like $46 million guaranteed too. Which is just, and I think that's also a topic for another day, as well, the idea that with the salary cap keeps increasing, guys we think are, you know, when we hear $12 million, we think of this player, that perception of that player is going to change as the salary cap keeps going up, up, and up. And so a lot of these contracts are kind of weird right now. We haven't had enough time of just like seeing it over and over again for it to make sense yet. But we have one last question from Lawrence Person this time. And he says, what are your top five superhero movies? We don't have time to get five, so I'll get one. My favorite superhero movie of all time is Blade. And I just think the first scene with the vampire blood shower is just so kick-ass, and the whole movie's kick-ass. I like the fat guy he burns with the flashlight. And also, I saw a movie when I was like 12 years old, too, and it just completely encapsulated me. And I was also playing a lot of Diablo 2 at the time, too. And I just walking around killing vampires was something that I really enjoyed watching. And I also didn't get to watch very many radar movies, too. And so that's my favorite superhero movie of all time.
Okay, I think my favorite superhero movie of all time would be the selfie film I took of last week when I – oh, wait, I can't go that direction on the show. Dang it, wrong podcast, never mind. I actually don't watch – I mean, I watch them. They're fine. I don't get all that excited about superhero movies. Sorry.
Wow, you sound like an adult. I don't know what to do. well, that's all we got. We got some really good questions. And the show went about 25 minutes longer than it usually does, and I think it's also a lot of things happen. And also, You can listen to just half the show. We only record once a week. So you can listen to 40 minutes tomorrow and 40 minutes on Thursday and still get the same, you know, level of analysis. And, I mean, the questions were just fantastic, and thank you, everybody, for asking those, you know, today. Everybody from Bled to Lawrence Person to Texian to, you know, Texan born and raised, they were great questions, and thank you, everybody, for those. And also, thank you for listening tonight, too. And if you enjoy the show, tell all your friends. That's the best way to get more people to listen to the podcast. We don't, you know, receive anything off from, but we just enjoy doing it, and we enjoy talking about football for, you know, an hour and a half every Tuesday or so. And so thank you for listening, and thank you for making us even want to keep doing it, because if we had three people listening, we probably wouldn't. And so you make our lives better by listening. So tell your friends, make our prides even stronger as well, too. And we may be back next week at 7 o'clock. I don't know. It kind of depends on what's going on, if any news happens. But that may be something up in the air, too, as well. And if we'll be there at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, the same time every week. And I'm at Weston. Thank you for staying well and listening. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio. And thank you for being on again tonight, BFT.
Woo!
I thought it was pretty good.